Baseball does it again. Great change in the rules that led to an awesome moment. Last night it was in the All-Star game where the game was tied after nine innings. So they went to a home run derby. Three guys from the American League, three guys from the National League. They each had three swings each. And it was Perloff's favorite player, Kyle Schwarber.
Second favorite player. Bryce Harper won, Kyle Schwarber two.
Well, Bryce wasn't there, but Kyle Schwarber got it done. A hat trick, yep. All three swings, three home runs. And the National League wins it in a way that I know this has been in the rules for a little bit. Obviously, it's the first time it's ever happened. And I got to commend Rob Manfred on this one. He had the Midas touch. That this one turned to gold. Very exciting way to determine this exhibition.
By the way, we're crediting Rob Manfred for all these changes in baseball. Did he actually think of these things, or did someone bring him these ideas and he sort of okayed them?
It's his regime. I think a lot of people would say ever since Theo Epstein has joined Major League Baseball, that all of a sudden, suddenly all these really brilliant ideas happening.
That sounds more right.
But, you know, but it happened under his watch, so he gets the credit.
Yeah, this was good. The excitement. Also, too, baseball, and I don't know if this is going to translate to more ratings or whatever, it seems like they have a lot of likable young stars. Like, and they all seem to like each other. Like, Schwarber everybody loves. Kyle Schwarber, even since the Cubs day, it's hard not to like him because he looks like a softball player who just happens to be good enough to play Major League Baseball.
That's what Smoltz said. If this guy retires right now, he'd be one of the best softball players in the world.
Yeah.
He's got that to look forward to. I mean, for now, I think he'll just keep mashing, trying to win another World Series. But I think that it starts with Judge and Ohtani at the top, right? The fact that you have these two larger-than-life guys who are historic figures, and they met in a World Series. If they meet in another one, like we're wondering, how does baseball keep this, you know, cool momentum from this All-Star break going to this postseason? I mean, that's how you do it. And you can't predetermine that. And obviously the Tigers and the Cubs, and you're going to have other teams that are going to have a say here. But I think for now, that would be the best outcome for baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a couple, like Ellie De La Cruz could become a face of the sport for sure. He looks like he's just thrilling. Even when he's not playing, he's thrilling. Something about him has a lot of quality. You know, the thing about Shohei, and I hate to say it, like now he's got the pitching thing going. Smoltz laid it out. It's like his batting is going down. So he can't.
Good thing he's not the Dodgers.
Because this year, I think we're going to see Kyle Raleigh and Aaron Judge chase 60, 65 homers. Shohei could easily do that, but he's focusing on pitching. I personally am disappointed. I want to see him win an MVP as a hitter again. Like, if he drops 20% as a hitter, I don't think that's ideal, but that's what you want to see. That's what the people want to see.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not alone. But also, I don't think that means he's going to lose the MVP. If his batting numbers
he's so far ahead of everybody.
But even if they dip, but he's still pitching, like this is how he's won in the past. Like the craziness of what he's trying to accomplish would catapult him and keep him in the lead for an MVP.
I don't think that's how he's won. I think his offensive war has been higher than everybody. He's won because he's the best hitter in baseball.
And pitching. That's all. No, but I'm saying even if his numbers take a dip, hitting wise, but he's still pitching, I think he's still winning the MVP is what I'm saying.
Well, he's won three MVPs, and you could fact check me on this. I think it's primarily because of hitting. Like his offensive numbers have been above everybody else. If they fall below everyone else, I'm not so sure. Because usually they give MVP to the best offensive player. I don't know that they vote that way.
I know we were just talking about in the American League, does Cal Raleigh get a boost because he's playing such a taxing position?
100%. He's definitely winning this.
What do you think pitching is? That you don't think that's taxing?
Like catching every day.
Shohei's putting his body through something crazy. I mean, that's such a, and it's also so different from what hitting and pitching, two completely different skill sets.
Oh, I understand.
Sorry, in 2021, he won MVP, but offensive war went to Guerrero. He wasn't top 10 in offensive war in 2021.
It's a Travis Hunter effect.
Overall war, he was
dude,
nine.
He had 46 homers in 2021.
You said offensive war.
I'm just saying, like, he did hit 46 homers, and he's definitely going to dip on home runs if he pitches. I'm just telling you.
No, like, I got you. I was just going by the numbers. I mean, he was.
But the argument was, did he win the MVP that year because of his pitching?
I mean, he was a phenomenal pitcher that year, too. that was a big part of why he also won. He was 9-2 with a 3.1 ERA.
I think as long as he's doing both, he's going to be winning the awards. That was my point. That's the bottom line. But meanwhile, you have the two guys, Judge and Ohtani, who are leading the way. You've got a young, exciting pitcher like Paul Skeens, who people will turn into, even if you're not a Pirates fan. It's a good spot. And I think that the changes, though, for baseball is really the headliner. Having the home run derby determine the game last night was wild and unique. And then secondly, the automatic balls and strikes call. So again, that is the pitcher, the batter, the catcher can all challenge a ball or strike call. You have two to start the game. You keep them if you win the challenges. You lose them if you lose the challenges. And there were five instances last night where a pitcher, a batter, or the catcher challenged the balls and strikes, and the players were right every single time. It's a big change. It's a huge change because at one point it got, in the ninth inning, it actually got the National League off the field because Edwin Diaz was on the mound and he challenged a call and it ended up being strike three. If it hadn't, the inning would have continued. So it's a big, big deal. These changes just continue to, have this massive impact. And then they're all for the better.
Definitely. Although, that being said, I mean, the big dog's coming pretty soon, and then we'll forget about baseball to some extent.
What, football?
Yeah, I mean, football, the problem with baseball is their postseason runs into this juggernaut right now. So it feels great in July. But I remember when Shohei showed up at the All-Star game, it was like, can they make that? Here's the question. Can they make that buzz continue? The other thing, too, is, and Manfred got into this, the small teams that have given up, that's problematic for the second half. There are some fundamental flaws with the game, too. I mean, we're kind of painting over other issues, like the Pirates, for example.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Manfred saying it's a problem that you have teams that are not spending money. I just don't believe, for as much as we want to throw roses at Manfred's feet this morning for some of the changes that have been good for baseball, I don't believe he's going to be calling out these owners in a real way.
How do they do that? I'm just curious, how do you fix the Pirates, for example?
How do you force owners to spend? You can try to force them to sell, but I don't know if that's going to, I don't think that's easy. You know, think about the times that, you know, franchises come for sale. Outside of the Lakers, which sort of happened, and that was pretty shocking.
Totally shocking.
A lot of times it's under duress. Like, the Dodgers got sold because their owner was going through a terrible divorce. Remember that?
He was in legal trouble, wasn't he?
All of it.
Yeah.
So that was a change. I mean, the Mets decided to sell because they
lost all their money
years before after the Madoff scandal and tried to hold on. Usually you're under some kind of duress, either personal or financial.
How did they get the Rays to sell? Because I know that was something.
Yeah, well, the Rays sold, but it was for less than a lot of teams are going for. Yeah. I don't know why Stu Sternberg decided to sell. I think it's because they can't get a stadium.
That was why.
Because it's been such a hurt.
The St. Petersburg stadium they were going for, it blew up. So once that happened, it was adios.
Let me ask you this, too. Why does the Pirates owner want to own the Pirates?
Because he makes a ton of money. I almost cursed there.
Really?
He makes a crap ton of money.
Hey, how? Easy.
So because it's revenue sharing, because the bigger and richer teams have to fund the smaller teams for parity.
He's not paying anything for players, so yeah. Everything else you make.
But how much revenue sharing do they make a year?
Well, it's off of TV contracts and all of it. I mean, you want to do a deep dive, the Pirates are making bank.
The Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets are subsidizing the Pirates. It's a complete Ponzi scheme.
Right, right. But they get like $250 million or something, right? Like, that's not. And they spend like
spend
$60 million.
Nothing. Yeah. It's like that becomes a lot of money.
But then there's a lot of cost with the stadium and I mean, it takes a lot to put on a baseball game. They can't be making. So they're just like banking money? I don't know. It seems all messed up to me.
You know what I keep saying?
Yeah.
Get rid of these broke boy owners. That's what we need. Get rid of these. Give me some real billionaires.
You know, to be honest though, EJ, I don't like some of them, but for example, the A's, okay? That ownership has been horrific.
John Fisher, by the way.
And you want to know where he got his money? The clothing store, The Gap. It's not that it's their family business. It is a family business, but he's got money from another revenue stream. This is not like the Cincinnati Bengals or something where it's that one revenue stream, and they still don't spend money. So
yeah, well, that was a whole another Ponzi scheme. That was I'm going to fake like I want to stay in Oakland, but I'm going to try to move to Las Vegas so I can get more money and then get another city who's desperate for a team to build me a stadium, which is also terrible. But for these owners that are actually on their that own their teams that are staying in their places, they're not trying to move.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys are just saying, hey, listen, I could buy a team. I don't got to spend anything, and I'm just getting money from TV deals and stuff. And they just raking just, the dough.
It's, yeah, they sit there.
It's so terrible.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. You want to talk about the All-Star game from last night, which, again, ended with a home run derby. But, guys, Mount Olympus Project is concluded.
Aww.
Our next gimmick starts soon. So, in the meantime, let's get back to the great debate.
The Great Debate Series.
Bro, miss the music.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I haven't done this in a while. I hope we're not out of shape. Okay, the Great Debate for today, loosely based off the news, as always, we're sticking with baseball. You have one swing for your life. For your life. One swing. Who do you want at the dish? Who do you want up to bat if you needed one swing for your life? Now, that could be a hit. That could be a home run. You don't know what the situation is. You just need to go with the person you would trust with a swing for your life.
We're not even doing it at bat. We're doing one swing.
Okay, you want to do an at-bat then.
Yeah.
Swing for your life sounds fun.
Swing for your life sounds better, but, like, what if it's a bit outside?
Okay, at-bat, plate appearance for your life.
I mean, this is easy. Let me ask you a question. Is there drug testing?
I mean, just go with whatever you want to go with.
That's very relevant because you know who I'm going to take. I mean, obviously, I'm taking early 2000s Barry Bonds. It's not even a question. One swing for your life, get all that armor on your arm, take some whatever. Let's go.
2-1. Swing it a long one. We are going home out of here. Unbelievable.
Boy, did they miss him.
You think they needed him back?
Oh, yes.
And the Giants are waiting for Bonds at home plate, and this is going to be some celebration.
So obviously I'm nitpicking here, but also they would walk him if it was swinging for your life. Like, but this is kind of situation. There's guys on base you can't walk Bonds. If you have to pitch to Bonds, and God forbid you can't walk if you have to throw a fastball, then it's a home run. Like, what are we even talking about here? Definitely Barry Bonds.
I'm just trying to think who was hitting behind Barry Bonds. Because if you were doing at bat for your life and you're worried that Bonds is going to get walked, then whoever's hitting behind him is actually maybe determining your life.
I was trying to remember, was Kent behind him?
I was going
to
say Jeff
in front
Kent.
Of him.
I thought it was Jeff Kent too, but it may have been. I don't remember who was hitting
talking
right behind
Pete
him.
Bonds, which year was the 73 home run year? Was that 01?
Yeah, 01.
Let's see.
I was looking at their World Series roster trying to give you at least the best team he was ever on.
By the way, in 2004, he had a 6.609 on base percentage. 60% of the time he got on base. It's the best number ever. Unbelievable. So I think in this exercise of this great debate, you're not going to be able to walk the guy. That's a given.
No. All right. The at-bat for your life. Who do you want at the plate? For me, it's somebody who is synonymous with clutch hitting, postseason hitting. Of course, that's Mr. October, Reggie Jackson.
Long drive right field, it is.
Goodbye.
Hard shot right field, it's gone.
Oh, what a World Series for Reggie Jackson.
Goodbye.
Oh, what a beam on his face. How can you blame him? He's answered the whole world.
There you go. That was all three in 1977. But Reggie Jackson, a two-time World Series MVP, a five-time World Series champion, hit nearly 300 in the postseason with 18 home runs and 48 RBIs. One of the most clutch hitters. And, of course, when you've got the nickname Mr. October Pearl, it just says it all there. If it's a one at-bat for my life, I want Reggie Jackson at the plate. All right, EJ, go ahead.
Great picks, as always. I think Maggie's on the right track. And I'm thinking about the most clutch, right? Because there are great hitters and better hitters over the course of different parts of the game. But when I'm thinking about this moment, you need a home run or you need a hit or you need someone to work in at-bat, I want someone who is absolutely nails at the plate. And there was no one greater than Big Poppy.
Ortiz in the deep right field.
back in Sheffield. We'll see you later tonight.
Yep, Ortiz, one of the greatest clutch hitters of all time. He's my pick.
All right, we're doing an at-bat for your life. That's the great debate today. Manny, who you got?
I mean, you guys are going sluggers, but it's not a home run to save your life. It's just a hit.
It could be whatever.
So why not go with the guy who has over 4,000 hits in his professional career, Ichiro Suzuki?
Crowd of 28,935 on their feet now. A couple of Hall of Famers going head-to-head. Hey, now! There's a drive! Deep right field! Going back, Swisher! Ichiro has beaten Mariano Rivera with a two-run game-winning home run! Mariners win it 3-2!
Yeah, sure, he can hit a home run once in a while as well, but if it's a hit to save my life, yeah, I'll go with the guy who's hit every baseball ever known to man.
But, man, you know, this was implied playoff, so not regular season.
All right, listen, it's not his fault that he played for the Seattle Mariners when they were
a long time.
Garbage.
Okay, the great debate today, the at-bat for your life. Chris Lopresti, you're filling in for Bogus today. This is a fun one for you, big
it
baseball
is, yeah.
fan. What do you got?
By the way, that was an enthused, fired up Dave Sims right there on the call. On
the
Mariners
preemptive
radio.
Hey
How about
now.
That?
Yeah.
Hey now!
Yeah. All right, I got to go. I mean, I got to go old school here. One of the greats, the great Bambino, the Sultan of SWAT, Babe Ruth, of course.
Ruth lets go the fatal throw, and the Babe socks it into the bleachers for his first homer of the series. A mighty smash, bringing his team a lead of 3 runs. And starting the avalanche, which gave the Yanks 7 and Chicago 5 when the game was over.
No hey now in that call.
No.
It goes back a little ways.
Hey now!
Attack this from whatever angle you want. You want to go, I just need a hit? All right, 342 career hitter. You want to go power the OG home run king. He's the career OPS leader, career war leader, top 5 when you take out pitching. Hitting-wise, only behind Perloff's boy Barry Bonds, who's... Of course, roared it up.
Yeah.
Hits righties.
Hey. Compromise.
Hits righties.
Hey.
Hits lefties. Never struck out over 100 times in a season. You want to go clutch. EJ said, looked up clutch stats on Baseball Reference. Every category, hit over 300. OPS over 1,000. Babe Ruth all day long.
Okay, so that's the question. You got the at-bat for your life. Who do you want at the plate? Again, Perloff going with Barry Bonds. I went with Reggie Jackson. EJ going with Big Poppy. Manny going with Ichiro. And CeeLo going with the great Bambino.
That's funny. You could have gone Lou Gehrig, too, right? Lou Gehrig has crazy postseason stats.
I believe is the career batting average leader or right up there.
Yeah.
So, but man, Ruth, he checks all the boxes.
So, at bat for your life. Let's go. It's the great debate. It's back. It's the Maggie Perloff Show.
Hey, now!
That song, Mr. October by Bad Bunny. Thank you, Manny. Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Wednesday, great debate time. We're back to the great debate. Maggie, I think that you sort of affected people by calling it swing for your life. And the situation presumably is I'm imagining 9th inning, Game 7, World Series, runners on 1st and 2nd. You got one batter. Who do you want up there? I think we all lean towards power, but maybe we were thinking the wrong way.
Yeah, and I was leaning also because I picked Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, which is why Manny played that rejoin. I was thinking postseason. Like,
yeah, me too. World Series.
Right.
Yeah, who cares about regular season?
Maybe we were wrong about this. Bob's in Detroit's got a big one that we missed. What's going on, Bob?
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're good.
Good. Yeah, I'm going contact all the way. I'd go with Tony Gwynn or Yogi Berra.
Yeah,
with
Bob,
the bat on the ball.
You know, the phone, thank you for that. The phone line's lit up, and everyone wants to tell us Tony Gwynn. PJ's in Atlanta. PJ, we miss Tony Gwynn, you think?
No, I don't think you missed him, Tony Gwynn.
PJ always tells us
no
like it is.
Thinking about it.
Yeah.
He had more assists in college playing basketball than he did strikeouts in the major league. He averaged 338, a billion, I mean, hits. Yeah. If you've got maybe Pete Rose, maybe somebody else, but Tony Gwynn, man, I mean, that guy was a dog.
Yeah.
So,
So you don't care. You don't care about any advanced statistics, on base percentage meaningless to you. You're more old school batting average.
Yeah, I'm an Orioles fan, so I like Eddie Murray and Jim Palmer with an overhand curveball and eats 4 pancakes. So, no. But Tony Gwynn's probably the best hitter I've ever seen.
PJ, thank you. And Adrian, go ahead, and I'll give you some Tony Gwynn stats after this. Your pick would be Tony also.
Tony Gwynn, 19 straight years, 300, and he holds the record for the 338, and like I said, 19 straight years. I also would have went with Rod Carew too. Good pick there. He's a contact hitter, somebody that's going to put the ball in play. If these guys played in the league now with the shift, they would hit 400 easily because they know how to handle the bat, unlike some of these guys. I'm glad nobody said Aaron Judge, Mr. Strikeout King in the playoffs, and Otani, he's got holes in his swing as well. So
my guy Bonds didn't have any holes.
Tony,
Adrian, Bonds Bonds made contact all the time. He didn't have any holes in his swing.
No, no. Perloff, I'm with you on Bonds. Bonds, yeah. It would be right after Tony Gwynn. Mm. And I played baseball. Baseball, the hardest sport to hit a baseball, round bat, round ball. Bonds was good before even they say the steroids. So your pick, Perloff, is a good pick.
Have you guys? Sorry, thank you, Adrian.
Thank you.
Have you guys ever heard the Adam Dunn Tony Gwynn argument? And I know it's the one thing that I have dipped into that makes people more mad than anything, that Adam Dunn was as valuable as Tony Gwynn based on advanced stats. People get so mad about that because Tony Gwynn got a hit, but he never walked. So therefore, in the 2000, you know, this century, his value definitely dipped. And I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is that's going to get you in trouble with people. But
he has a 388 on base percentage. Barry Bonds had a 444 on base percentage, and even Adam Dunn had a 364 on base percentage. Like, if you counted walks as hits, then I think Tony Gwynn would be viewed differently.
Okay, well, I think this is where people start to get upset about that, because you're just saying you're taking those numbers with Adam Dunn for career, determining runners on, two outs. Like, you're not doing the situation in the game, are you, when you're doing those on-base percentages? It's just,
well,
overall,
no, I mean,
like bases empty?
Well, yeah, but I mean, Tony Gwynn was a table setter more than a driver inner, I thought. So what's the difference?
Okay, but I can give you some stats here. So here's some slash lines for you, okay? So what he was slash 444, 433, 594 with bases loaded over his career.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? He slashed 352, 411, 480 with runners on base. Like, if we're talking about those clutch stats, that's how baseball would determine them. Late and close, runners on.
With
two outs and runners in scoring position, his on-base percentage was 446.
Oh, great. Yeah. I mean, but I'll give you a cumulative. Dunn had more RBIs in his career than Gwynn. So Dunn Dunn had a huge OPS. That's why, like, and he definitely, like, created a lot of runs.
No, that's
and
they would fine, say, but Tony, it's not Tony Gwynn's fault of if there are runners on in front of him in terms of driving them in. He's just what he hit with them.
But if you do on-base percentage combined with slugging percentage, Dunn was better. I mean, that's modern baseball. I hate to say it, like, and we're starting to see a little more of that strikeout and hit a homer.
I'm surprised you wouldn't do this, though.
Yeah.
This is another Tony Gwynn stat that's crazy. Facing Hall of Fame pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Struck out twice.
That, and he slashed 331, 371, 426 against Hall of Fame pitchers.
God. Do you realize how close his batting average and his on-base percentage were? Like, honestly, the guy was a swinger.
Here we go again.
My favorite, my most effective Philly of all time is Lenny Dykstra, because the guy took about 14 pitches in a bat. It was incredible. He would just take, foul, towel. Like, Tony Gwynn would hit a lot of singles. Rod Carew hit a lot of singles. They aren't modern players. I mean, now, you saw the game last night. Like, who are we talking about? Cal Raleigh and Aaron Judge will swing or hit a homer or strike out.
I know, but this is our great debate today, which you're welcome to weigh in on at 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476, at bat for your life.
And everyone's doing contact. Like, they need to get the ball in play. Like, I don't know. We're talking about, like, at bat for your life. You don't want Reggie Jackson or Barry Bonds up there? You want Ichiro and Tony Gwynn?
Maybe you and I, Pearl, are getting too like-minded after sitting here next to each other for all these years and being friends all these years.
You already know I want a drag bunt.
You and I both thought of the two, maybe two of the most famous home run hitters Chris Lopresti's in with us today. Yeah. You picked Babe Ruth.
I went both ways. Yeah. You know, guy can hit and hit for power.
EJ, oh, yeah. We're all doing groupthink here because EJ's at Big Poppy, most known for home runs in clutch situations.
Yeah,
also Poppy hit for high average too.
Yeah, all the guys we named except for Reggie hit for high average. But
I mean, Reggie was hovering around near 300.
Was he?
Just under. Postseason, it was like 3.
Postseason, okay.
Postseason was like 280.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed his career batting average was, somewhere in that range.
Stand by. I got to find it for you.
I also factored in, like, this may be a situation where I need a home run. So, right. I couldn't just, if it's hit for your life, that, like, to me, the options are open to what that means. So,
I think we all did that, EJ. Yeah, I totally agree.
You know, so, like, Gwynn was amazing. If I needed a single for my life, maybe I would think Gwynn, but a hit totally, you got to factor in power, too.
Ichi, just lay one down the first baseline, beat it out to first. That was my mentality.
Well, here's the thing, too. We saw Poppy do it in the World Series. The fact that we didn't see a lot of that for Gwynn.
And Bonds really only had one postseason run, really. It was the last one when they went to the World Series and lost in 7. Before that, he was known as a postseason loser.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. But it wasn't really his fault. It wasn't like Clayton Kershaw where he was
bad
giving it up.
No, he was bad in the postseason.
What, against the Braves?
Every year, Giants in the pitch. His Giants and Pirates runs, he was known as a guy who was a bad postseason player. And coming to that World Series, it was like, all right, like, Bonds is finally here. Like, what's it going to be like? And throughout that whole postseason, he was insane.
Yeah.
He became a totally different player.
2002, he had 356 with 8 homers. Prior to that, let me count up the games. 14, 20, 27 postseason games prior to that. One home run. Oof. And a batting average hovering somewhere around 200.
Oof. Yeah, but take the Pirates out of that after he
Giant. Okay, inflated. 97 and 2000. With the Giants, total of 7 games, no home runs, 3 RBIs.
When did the homers start, though?
6 for 29. The homers, what, for him in his career period? I mean, let's see. 93 with the Giants, he had 46 home runs, 123 RBIs.
Not bad. I'm talking about the homers. The steroids, you know what I'm talking about.
2001 was the 73 home run season, And then the next year in 02, he
that's the Bonds
in the
I want.
Postseason.
I'm not taking all career
Bonds.
Yeah,
the Bonds with the head that was going to explode and it was all yoked up.
You never, Maggie, did put a drug test into this great debate. It's her fault.
Me? I didn't want to spoil it with I'm sorry, we're going to need a pee sample, and then we're going to need another one. So, Mr. Bonds, if you can just step into the urinal.
The stuff he's taking, you're not going to get it through a urinal. Yeah. Trust me.
Fair.
I think as commissioner, I'm looking the other way in this great debate. I'm doing a, Bud Selig. I have nothing to see here. Barry Bonds. I mean, can you imagine if Reggie had access to all that? Oh, my God. Boy. He maybe did.
I couldn't help but think about Bud Selig last night, that bozo. I'm watching this game that, you know, I'm thinking, oh, man, we're going to have another tie. Then I learned about a swing-off. I was like, wow, this is cool. Like, remember that idiot didn't have any idea what to do if the All-Star game went into extra innings? And he was just sitting there with his hands in his pocket talking to the umpires, being like, oh, what do we got here? Oh, I don't know what we're going to do. I guess we got to call the game a tie.
How bad was that they literally just, like, walked over to him in the stands?
I know.
It was crazy.
This is what happens when you make a used car salesman and you're commissioner.
That long ago, how did nobody think about that? Like, as if extra innings wasn't a real thing in baseball. Like, oh, this is never going to happen. Why not?
His face, he looks so dumbfounded. I'm like, this guy has zero answers. He has no idea what to do.
There was a moment when I got to cover the MLB draft when it used to happen out at MLB Network. Okay, this is not that long ago, but I guess it was kind of that long ago. And he was still the commissioner, and he was doing interviews with everybody, but would not do any of them on camera. And I'm like, that's a bad sign. If you're the commissioner of the sport, you're literally the face of the sport, and you will not do an on-camera interview, only with like written newspaper reporters, unless it was MLB Network, which I'm assuming he had knowledge of all the questions they were going to ask him.
That guy's in the Hall of Fame. What a disgrace.
Let's get to CeeLo, who's got headlines for us.
Real quick on that, my favorite Bud Selig on-camera moment. Mm. Do you remember Aaron Andrews doing the Fox MVP World Series presentation, Madison Bumgarner, and they had the guy from Chevy?
Oh, and he was so total nervous. Mess.
And if you just watch Selig in that video, it looks like he has no idea what planet he's on. Oh, he's like, where am I? What's happening? That is just an all-timer.
He was like basically the regional director of some Chevy dealer somewhere. Can you grab that for next hour?
Yes.
The regional director, he had a title that was not commensurate with the moment that he claimed on TV. Like,
it was like, you know, of all the Chevy employees, he probably was like, hey, we picked you. You get to be the guy. And he was completely unprepared.
Am I remembering this right? He was like a heavy set guy.
Yes.
And he was sweating.
Oh, yeah.
And he was nervous.
Yes.
And Aaron Andrews is there. As I'm sure
she hands it off to him. I love that when she hits his name, it's like, Rick Wildea. Who is this guy?
What a disgrace.
And, like, and Bumgarner, who's gotten zero personality in that spot. And Selig's just like, he's like, what's happening right now?
The biggest train wreck TV moment of all time.
So, so good.
Anyway.
All right, let me hit you with something a little different, a little twist on the All-Star festivities as the National League did win in the swing-off, courtesy of Kyle Schwarber, who went 3-for-3. He got MVP honors, I should say. Now, the biggest hot take from All-Star festivities, Mets first baseman Pete Alonso. I guess this was either pregame or media day where he's, you know, he's sitting there. It's kind of like the Super Bowl and anyone can come through and ask questions, sure, whoever's got a credential. So he gets the typical, if you could change one rule about baseball, what would it be? Question. Audio is not great, but you can kind of make out what he's saying here, and I can fill in some of the blanks for you. Here's the first part of his answer.
There's one rule I could change. So I don't think people should get ejected after charging the mound or fighting. So I think it should be hockey style.
Shouldn't get ejected for charging the mound and fighting. We just go hockey style. All right, hockey style.
So you get like a penalty box?
Well, not quite. He had some parameters and alterations, which he would lay out here.
I think there's a rule. If you want to go out and charge them out, then you should be able to. But if the pitcher or hitter or whoever charges, and if they don't want to fight, they take a knee, and then they don't have to fight. But if someone charges the mound, it's 1v1 hockey style, and then that's it. And then the loser has to be the winner. The fight stays in the game.
The loser gets kicked out. Yeah. The winner stays. But if you don't want to fight, just take a knee. Could you imagine? You remember the Robin Ventura, Nolan Ryan? Like, here goes Robin Ventura running out to the mound. Nolan Ryan takes a knee, and Robin's like, okay, all right. So all bets are up.
The universal signal for we don't fight now. This is the proof that baseball players have way too much downtime. They're hanging out in the clubhouse hours before the game. There's so much downtime in between while the game's going on, and then all those road trips and all those flights. This is born out of that dumb back of the plane. Whatever.
He's also a strange cat, so that's, we got to take that into account.
Let's do
it
dual style where you shoot your gun up into the air. Yes. Duel's over. Duel's over.
How about
was it jousting? Let's get on a horse and let's hold a spear. Let's have run right at each other and see who comes off the horse.
It's a Renaissance fair.
And who, by the way, who determines the winner and the loser? Is that now an additional job for the home plate umpire?
Like Dan Iasonia.
Good God.
By the way, the guy that takes a knee is going to get dragged for the rest of his career. Like, look at this coward. Imagine you just got to get beat up. You can't take a knee.
Yeah, take a knee when you go back into the clubhouse because your own team's going to
disown you.
Can you imagine Don Zimmer charging at Pedro Martinez and Martinez takes a knee?
Don wishes he took a knee, by the way.
Also, I mean, he'd end up taking one on his backside because he was 80. Penalty box, though, or do you have to miss, like... Do you miss a time through the order if you charge?
You miss a timeout. You play with eight.
Okay, or one time through, automatic out.
Something like that.
I have a question.
Batting out of order situation.
You guys watch more baseball than me. Are there fights anymore? I thought that went away.
Rarely. It happens sometimes.
Basically just between the Padres and the Dodgers.
Usually what happens is, you know, the hitter will kind of start to walk out to the mound like he's going to do something.
Because their hands are way too valuable
now,
right?
Hold me back. The last real good one, unless I'm missing one, was... Jose Bautista and Neto Odor. That was at second base.
Was that a fight, though?
That was like 2017.
That was a punch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
I mean, he connected. That's what I mean. I mean, you have benches. Oh, the bench is cleared. No punches. There's some pushing and shoving. Guys yell at each other. But I can't remember the last true, like, hey, we're going after each other.
I love when the bullpen clears and they're just sprinting in from the outfield, but nobody is throwing a punch. Right. Like, why are you exerting all that energy, buddy? Yeah.
See, the hockey guys are
making it look like an effort. You know, like I ran in. I was ready to throw hands, but no.
The hockey guys are super padded for those fights. Like,
until the helmet comes off.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even then, like, they really can't get, like, you know, there's a lot of reasons. Like, if they were just, like, in just regular uniform, it would be a much different fight.
Yeah. I mean, you get a guy, you'll get a cut to the face, lip, eye, whatever, eyebrow along the way. But, yeah, it's not like it once was where guys would throw the helmets off, roll the sleeves up, and just
baseball
really
fights that could be dangerous, right? I remember what's the one with there was a Mets fight where a guy got slugged, right?
Oh yeah, it was a couple years ago. Yeah, it was, and ironically, I think when I heard Pete say this, I was like, well, this sounds like a guy who has a career lead in hit by pitches among Mets players. This guy gets hit all the time. So the only reason he doesn't charge, I think, is because he doesn't get thrown out of a game. But I think finally he got hit, and I think he, I don't think he charged, but I think he at least went towards the mound. And one of the Mets, one of the, what it's like, it was like a assistant coach, like, tackled Pete Alonso. I remember going crazy, being like, they could have injured a guy. And I think a Mets bullpen guy or whatever got tangled up with another coach. I feel like the coaches fight more now than the players.
The Padres and the Dodgers were just fighting. I mean, that happened a couple weeks ago.
Yes, that was, and Dave Roberts and Mike Schilt. Yeah, they were, now they weren't exchanging blows.
No, but they
had to be held back, and they were screaming at each other. And yeah,
it's still alive, Pearl. But this idea from Pete Alonso, where if you charge the mound and then somebody, if the pitcher wants to take a knee, then you don't fight. Oh, okay.
Man. Yeah, Padres, Mets, Cardinals. It was a brawl 2022. Huh. Pete Alonso got hit. And again, I think one of the Cardinals, like, third base coaches or someone got, like, suspended because he, like, tackled Pete Alonso. Alonso's like, what are you doing, bro?
Only recent Mets fight I can remember is Jeff McNeil wanting to punch Francisco Lindor.
Oh, they did get into it. They're teammates, though, so it's a little bit different.
Squirrel and the, what was it?
Raccoon.
Raccoon. Was it a raccoon? Yeah, raccoon and a squirrel. You're right, yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Got one more for us?
I have the little bit of added context for Scottie Scheffler. You'd like to hear that?
Oh, yes. Okay. So Scottie Scheffler, who is contemplating. Actually, can we take a break and you come back and do that?
Yeah.
I want to take a quick break. We still have the great debate there for you, which is one at-bat for your life. Who do you want at the plate for one at-bat for your life? That's the great debate today. And also, Scottie Scheffler getting very contemplative about the meaning of life.
Pretty much, yeah.
Another side of the three-time major champion. Do that next. Welcome back, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Today is Wednesday. The Great Debate is back. Feels so good after our Mount Olympus project came to an end, but that was a lot of fun also. We're asking you today, who would you want at the plate if it was one at-bat for your life? So go around the horn again, Perloff.
Barry Bonds, obviously.
I went with Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, EJ.
David Ortiz, Big Poppy.
Ichiro Suzuki for Manny.
And CeeLo's in today for Andrew Bogish.
Great Bambino, Babe Ruth. I don't know how give me Ruth against Paul Skeens. I want to see that matchup.
Well, that's three pitches, three strikes.
Yeah,
sit down.
That's it? You're
sit
not
down,
giving
George.
Ruth any shot?
Mm-mm. Wow. Sit down, George.
Okay. Yeah, I believe it was Adam Ottavino who once said he would strike out Babe Ruth on three pitches.
Yankee
I don't know
legend.
What Paul Skeens would
Come
do.
On.
That was Adam Ottavino. Joe is in San Francisco. Joe, at bat for your life. Who is it?
Ricky Henderson. He got the most leadoff home runs.
Let's hear it.
He had some opportunities and pitched in relief. There's a swing and a long drive. That is belted far deep. Left center field. Gone. Another Ricky Henderson leadoff home run.
Clark was down at AAA for 18 days in June. Other than that, he's been with the ball club since the start of the year.
There's a drive to left field. It's hit deep. It is gone. Holy Toledo. Has anyone ever done that? Ricky Henderson has homered to open the A's first inning for the second time in this doubleheader.
Why are we doing a Ricky Henderson highlight reel here? He got two homers?
Because they're fun. Joe, thank you for the call. Ricky,
people love Ricky.
Ricky Henderson, I mean, if you want to do his OPS, 820, not bad, slash for his career, 279, 401, 419.
Ricky's one of those guys that, like, transcends time. He would be, like, maybe more valuable now.
Well, I feel like he's, like, I'm getting into this debate. He's a table setter. You lead him off. Like, swing for your life means there's guys on base and you're in a clutch situation. Not that Ricky couldn't do that, but that's not what you think of Ricky. Ricky's leading off.
Yeah, I guess everyone interprets at bat for your life in a different way. Are the bases empty? Are the bases loaded? Is the first pitch of the game? Is the last pitch of the game?
I think there's only one way to interpret it. It's game seven it's for your life. It can't be the 62nd game in June and, like, it's a Tuesday night against the Diamondbacks. That's not a bat for your life. Bat for your life is game seven. a ninth inning, bases loaded, down by a run. That's bat for your life. I mean, there's no other scenario for bat for your life.
Bat for your life, reach, or you're executed on the spot. You're dead.
Yeah, like shot for your life is the last shot in an NBA Finals game. It's not like second quarter of week two in the NBA. Of course, there's only one way to define this. I don't know what you're talking about.
Gun to your head.
Yeah, 888-710-4ISN. Keep them coming on the at-bat for your life. Who do you want at the plate? Now, CeeLo, we teased this going the last break. Scottie Scheffler getting really philosophical in his last interview before the British Open Open Championship starts this weekend. And it was kind of like a what does it all mean sort of thing. And the idea that these winning these tournaments and even the highest of the highs that he's experienced, it's only fleeting the satisfaction that he feels, and then it's kind of a letdown. So you have more on that.
Yeah, short-lived. And I don't even know what the question was, honestly. I've seen the extended five-minute clip, which is just him expounding and giving these thoughts. So I'm not entirely sure of what the context was, but obviously what he's discussing is pretty clear. And this is the part I mentioned to you earlier where he brings in the family element and what's going on off the golf course. And I think when you hear this part, it maybe makes a little bit more sense, some of the clips we heard earlier.
You know, that's why I talk about families being my priority, because it really is. You know, I'm blessed to be able to come out here and play golf, but if my golf ever started affecting my home life, or it ever affected the relationship I have with my wife or with my son, you know, that's going to be the last day that I play out here for a living. You know, this is not the be all end all. This is not the most important thing in my life. And that's why I wrestle with, why is this so important to me? Because, you know, I would much rather be a great father than I would be a great golfer.
Which is endearing. And he did say, like, every year, why do I want to win the Masters so bad? Why do I want to win this tournament so badly? So he has that fire and desire leading into the tournaments, but he's also juxtaposing it against, like, real life stuff rather than just playing a sport.
I'm going to be honest. It's rare that you hear athletes be open and honest that, you know, this is not the most important things in their life, because I think there's a lot of pressure to say that, even if you don't think it's true.
Athletes say that crap all the time. They just don't mean it.
I think he means it.
The other part too is there's like a very funny, do you guys know the comedian Neil Brennan?
He's a
writer on the Chappelle Show for a long time. Yeah, yeah. And he said, they call people who are well-adjusted in sports are called assistant coaches. Like, you don't want your superstars to be well-adjusted. You want them to be, like, we hold Michael Jordan and Kobe, their mentality, in higher revere than we do LeBron James.
Yeah, who stone cold crazy.
Right. And that's kind of what, not only do we want, that we kind of expect from guys who are at the top. And so for Scheffler to say, listen, golf's not the most important thing in my life, like, la-di-da, I could take it or leave it, win the Masters, either sounds fake or is not what we associate with people at the top of their sport.
I think the reason he was so sad, I think he's dedicated a lot of his life to golf. And he's just like, I think he's a maniacal worker, because I'm assuming based on his game that
he referenced that as well.
Well, yeah,
he puts in the work.
There's no steadier golfer. Like, he's just like, feels like he's really on it. But everybody says that their kids are their most important. Like, that's what you say. Even Michael Jordan probably said that. And he was at the casino till 4.
Let's hear it. So this is one of the clips from Scotty that made us worry a little bit about the guy.
I love the challenge. I love being able to play this game for a living. It's one of the greatest joys of my life. But does it fill the deepest, you know, wants and desires of my heart? Absolutely not.
You know, you always hear on your deathbed, you never say, oh my God, I wish I'd gotten that promotion at work. You always say, I wish I'd spent more time with my family and friends. You hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's the energy he's getting to. In the moment, it feels like your job is the most important thing. But on your deathbed, you're going to be like, why did I care so much, right?
And also life, when he set out to play golf, there was no wife and kid. You know, he was playing for himself, love of the game, achievement, all that. All of a sudden you get married, you have a kid, it changes your perspective on things.
Here's more from Scheffler.
It's fulfilling from the sense of accomplishment, but it's not fulfilling from a sense of, like, the deepest, you know, places of your heart. You know, there's a lot of people that make it to what they thought was going to fulfill them in life, and then you get there and all of a sudden you get to number one in the world, and then they're like, what's the point? And, you know, I really do believe that, because, you know, what is the point? You're like, why do I want to win this tournament so bad? That's something that I wrestle with on a daily basis.
Yeah. He's going to walk away tomorrow. I hear burnout.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah, yeah. And also, if you're an individual sport player, maybe you can say stuff like this. A team sport athlete can't say this in the prime of their career if they're the best player on the team.
But
counting on you, relying on you. Now, Scheffler's got an inner circle of people, I'm sure, that rely on him. But if you're, you know, Patrick Mahomes, he can't be like, I'm sorry, what do all the wins mean? You got people out there playing with broken fingers, you know, knee injuries. Everyone's all banged up and beat up. You can't be like, you know, yeah. To be honest, not that fulfilling.
Also, too, it's golf. Like, it's the schedule's relentless. And yes. When you're on vacation, what do? You
play
go
golf.
You go play golf. So there's 365 days a year.
Try tennis. I don't know. No. All right. CeeLo, thank you for that.
I have a major, major complaint about the great debate. This is, as EJ said, crap. This is the results of this poll. People are misunderstanding what this is all about.
As EJ would say, this crap is crap. At bat for your life.